Thank you, Ian, for that introduction. That's all. I'm Paul Adams, CEO of Gemina, and I just wanted to talk through. There were four things I wanted to raise today in relation to the energy markets and climate change. One is it will require significant private investment. The government will not be able to do this on its own without private investment. Point two, the physical networks will need to change. They'll need to change to cope with the weather. They'll need to change to cope with the new technologies being connected, the wind farms, the microgens, all the PVs, all of those things that need to happen will mean the networks need to change. And they will need to change to cope with demand management and some of the other smarts that are required to enable these networks to operate in a different way. Thirdly, the CPRS framework needs to make sure that the economic signals reach the customer. The rules need to be written in a way that a lot of long-term contracts and a lot of arrangements so that the price signals can actually reach the customer, and this needs to be given some consideration. And fourthly and finally, there's this transition period from where we are today, as Ian indicated, 80 to 85% coal with a large generation capacity normally near the source, transmission lines to the load, to an interconnected multi-grid type network. It's not going to happen overnight, and it needs to be very well managed. So firstly, who is Gemina? A lot of people may or may not know, but Gemina is the owner and service provider, and as mentioned earlier, 1 in 8 Australians rely on Gemina for the delivery of gas and electricity. We also do water work for Sydney Water. We own networks such as the AGL Gas Network in New South Wales, the Victorian Distribution Network, the pipelines that run from the coal seam fields in the middle of Queensland up to Gladstone and up to Rockhampton. We also do a lot of construction work for other powers, Western Aurora, Transgrid and those. So a fairly substantial company. It's a growing business at the moment, and it's a business where we're taking the long-term view on this situation. We're a privately owned company, and our backers are looking to the long-term future. Climate change is here. I think I've lived in Victoria a long time, and it's just getting hotter. The weather's becoming more volatile, and I think, to me, let's just put that debate behind us. And even if we don't agree with the debate, the other key thing is the government does, and the government's going to introduce a lot of rules that means that we need to respond. So let's work out how we're going to deal with it. The last few weeks in Victoria hopefully don't symbolise the future environment, but if they do, the networks are going to need a considerable change just to cope with the weather impacts on the networks. One of the key points I mentioned earlier was around the need for the networks to change, and climate change proofing our networks will require significantly increased investment. We will need to invest in new technologies and new ways of operating these networks, not just in a sense of new transformers or wires, but in a sense of smarts. So the thermal ratings of the transformers, we'll need to reassess those depending on the climate. The selective undergrounding, the fault levels, the way that we connect the interconnected, the smartness, the smart meter programs, the local use of microgens on our gas network. In fact, I heard earlier that one of the technologies coming out of the US is a compressed natural gas vehicle, and there's a company in South Melbourne that has the compressor rights for this, where you can put this compressor in your garage, it'll compress the natural gas, you load it into your car, and it runs at an average of about 3 to 4 cents a litre. Now, this is coming out in the motor shows now. That will basically double the consumption for every household on our network. Now, will that happen? Won't it happen? How do I balance for that? On the same time, plug-in electric cars, how do they fit in, how does that battery storage, if there's a battery in the car and that's plugged into the network with an inverter, if the power goes out, can the battery be used to supply the car, how does that interconnect with the PV cells on the roof and the wind farm down the road, and these are all the things that as a network we're the person that has to integrate all these things together and make sure that we back the technologies that can do that, which probably leads me to a point here that Penny Wong spoke last week at the G20 summit on financing of the change. And she said, the scale of financing to meet this challenge is large. It is likely to far exceed what governments can generate through public funding alone. The private sector will be an important source for investments necessary to complete this transformation. I use the word transformation. For this reason, we should consider carefully how best to tailor public financial and policy instruments to attract and support private investment and innovation. So it's right there in front of the agenda, and I think that's the approach we're taking. But I suppose one of the concerns that we have as a business is we have policy now that clearly says we want to invest in infrastructure, we've got a global credit crisis, we need to invest in the future, and we need to invest in smart technologies and networks, infrastructure for example, and at the same time we have the energy regulator coming back saying we're going to reduce the returns on investment for energy infrastructure. We're going to reduce it to an amount where we can't get the cash to actually invest in this. So I think one of the key things, we cannot afford to let this happen in this environmental debate. It's too important to have policy positions here and to have regulatory outcomes or the rules not aligned with that. And John and I will sure have lots of chats over this time on that. Just a little bit about Gemini. The way the current NG is written is that the Scope 1 activities, or the Scope 1, is mainly around our gas distribution leakage on our pipelines and our networks. But it's not on this slide, but it's important to note, and in terms of Scope 2, which is reportable, are electricity losses. And it's interesting that gas losses are considered part of Scope 1, but electricity losses are considered part of Scope 2, and that's for the market to sort out. So there's a whole range of dynamics that are out there in the market at the moment, and will this be the same? Will it change? How do the market rules line up is another question we put out there. Gemini and the whole carbon reduction scheme. We believe that this transition, as I mentioned earlier, needs to be carefully managed. In the short term, because of this accelerated time frame, we're in 2009, and by 2020, that's 11 years, it'll all be done, 20%. That's a very ambitious target, and that is a huge change. And in the short term, we believe there's going to be considerable downside risk, and we'll all need to work together to make sure we get there. But on the positive side, Gemini believes that there's a lot of upside opportunities. If we get it right, there's a lot of opportunities for Australia to be one of the leading countries in this whole new green economy that's coming along, because we're going to be the ones that's going to have to make the biggest shift from a position here to a position here. And if we can do that, we'd obviously be the world leaders, because to make that leap is going to be a lot larger than nearly any other developed country. And of course, Gemini's keen to be a player in that market. I suppose the point I made earlier about the costs of these programs and the price signals need to be able to pass through to customers. And the point I'd make here is that on the regulated front, where we believe, we'll wait and see the outcome, but we believe they'll be able to pass through the regulated price resetting programs to make sure the signals can get there. In relation to our pipelines and our long-run contracts, we need to make sure that the framework is written in such a way that the price signals can come through the transport to the end-use customers, and they're not trapped in the value chain. So it's important the wording in those contracts is structured in a way that actually means the policy is set here, but it actually can be implemented in practice in terms of the commercial environment we operate within. Our wind farm, we're supporting that. I've noticed this slide, and John mentioned it earlier, that the RET schemes are going to promote wind farms in the earlier years, where we tend to agree with that opinion, that's going to be the initial technology, and there's a number of these proposals being put together at the moment. And I suppose the other point is the stability of the networks. I think what people mightn't understand is that networks are not inherently stable. You know, they want to do, unless you keep controlling them, unless you keep them balanced, the voltages, the frequencies can fluctuate, the stability on the lines, your lights can go up and down, and this is all controlled through a series of protection systems and secondary systems. And these have to be able to operate quickly. Now, if one starts injecting different load points and different generation into that, there's a whole range of stability and dynamics. These networks have to become smart or we won't be able to use these renewable technologies. So, in terms of our policy, clearly we seek to minimise our carbon footprint and we're going through the same as many other organisations. And we're looking to partner with others. We're already on this path to provide the services, the infrastructure and the technology to enable this transformational change to occur. We're an active participant in this market and we will continue to do so. You know, we need to build this new energy sector. This is a long-term challenge for Australia and Gemini is a long-term business and want to be part of that. Just a few examples, climate change, the smart meter rollout, happy to take questions on that. Energy efficiency, we've got compressor stations and a whole range of activities within our business that we're looking at this point, what can we do in our business to improve our carbon position. So, if I can, in conclusion, I just wanted to make another, I took out another section of Penny's speech the other day, which basically says that considering around 80% of Australia's electricity comes from coal, achieving these ambitious outcomes by 2020 will require a complete re-engineering of the Australian energy sector. Now, a complete re-engineering of the Australian energy sector in 10 years when we're just about to learn the rules, I think that's a huge challenge and I just wanted to make sure we better all work together to get this right because it's something we're going to live with for a long time. So, in summary, one is this will require significant private investment and for that investment to happen in new and risky technologies, there needs to be an appropriate return. Secondly, the physical networks will need to change. They will need to become smarter. They will need to have that interconnectedness to adapt to this environment. Thirdly, the framework must operate in a functional way, in a practical way, so that the information can get from policy down to implementation. And finally, the transformation must be carefully managed. We must all work together on this, and it's a major challenge for us, for our country. So on that, thank you.